And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget that after the show is aired, you can also go to our website, which is www.nagb.org.bs, and you can go to the education link and scroll down, and you can find all the archive shows. So if you just got in the car and you missed the first segment, or you're on your way somewhere and you think Graham's really interesting and you want to listen more, then you can go and listen to the show tomorrow or the day after on our website. So I am speaking to Graham Fagan, who is a Scottish artist living in Glasgow. He's visiting the Bahamas right now because he is opening a show at the National Art Gallery together with three Bahamian artists called We Suffer to Remain. And the show came out of the British Council were supporting Graham's work and talking about moving it through the region and other countries for various reasons, which we will get into talking about later. And our position at the National Art Gallery was like, we thought that was an interesting piece. We'd love to have that in conversation with work by Bahamian artists who got a chance to look at the work and then create artwork that responded to it. I'm going to now, the work is entitled The Slave's Lament. And Graham, am I right in saying that it was created for the Venice Biennale in 2015?
My version was created for the Venice Biennale in 2015, but the original version is by a Scottish poet called Robert Burns, and he published that song in 1792.
So I'm going to read that poem, the poem that was the inspiration for Graham's work that we're going to speak about afterwards. It was in sweet Senegal that my foes did me enthrall, for the lands of Virginia, Virginia, oh, torn from that lovely shore, and must never see it more. And alas, I am weary, weary, oh. Torn from that lovely shore, and must never see it more. And alas, I am weary, weary, oh. All on that charming coast is no bitter snow and frost, like the lands of Virginia, Virginia, oh. There are streams forever flow, and there flowers forever blow. And alas, I am weary, weary, oh. There are streams forever flow, and there flowers forever blow. And alas, I am weary, weary, oh. The burden I must bear, while the cruel scourge I fear, in the lands of Virginia, Virginia, oh. And I think on friends most dear, with a bitter, bitter tear. And alas, I am weary, weary, oh. I'm going to end right there. Is there more? Because you said a line about the British gold.
Oh, no, that was a different Robert Burns song poem. That was a Robert Burns poem called A Parcel of Rogues and a Nation. And we were talking earlier about Scotland being a nation, but also being part of the United Kingdom. So I brought that poem up in relation to the Act of Union between Scotland and England, which was in 1707, and one of the first acts that were signed after the Act of Union was an act that allowed Scottish merchants access to the transatlantic slave trade. And Robert Burns penned a poem about that as well, which was called A Parcel of Rogues and a Nation. And the kind of hook line of it was, "We are bought and sold for English gold, such a parcel of rogues in a nation."
So the Scottish people being bought and sold as well as the African people. So really it's about giving up your freedom to have access to a market in a way to enrich a few and then a sort of selling off the nation in a way.
Yeah, I suppose I suppose the whole debate on nationality is loaded, and you have pro and against and I suppose Burns's poem was perhaps reflecting people living in Scotland at that time who would have preferred to have stayed an independent country rather than being a country at union with England. And of course the main beneficiaries were the people who were signing the agreement acts after the Act of Union, which you know were merchants who were able to get access to that transatlantic slave trade route.
So what was it about this poem, the one that I just read, The Slave's Lament? How did you come across that? I mean, I would imagine you learn Robert Burns in school in Scotland. I would imagine that's a pretty common thing. But what was it? What was the evolution of that piece? And yeah. and maybe talk a little bit about what the piece is, because it's a video piece that's sort of, maybe talk a bit about, like, you know, what you did with that.
Sure. Well, I guess I grew up with an idle curiosity, and the idle curiosity was really related to my formal education, mm-hmm. Which taught me that Robert Burns was my cultural heritage, and my informal education, because I suppose away from school, I caught the end of the punk rock movement mm-hmm. in the UK, and along with the punk rock movement came Jamaican reggae mm-hmm. and dub poetry.
Linton Kwesi Johnson.
Linton Kwesi Johnson, my favourite poet.
Grew up with him too, yeah.
My favourite poet isn't Robert Burns yeah. at all. It's Linton Kwesi Johnson is yeah. my favourite poet. So away from school, informally, I was... myself and my peer group were going to see Jamaican reggae bands, and along with the Jamaican reggae and punk movement came another movement called Rock Against Racism.
Mm-hmm. And again, just for the listening audience, I mean, I'm sure they're familiar, but of course in the UK we have a very large Jamaican population yeah. Because of, you know, immigration from the 50s mostly,
yeah,
right? So
huge,
very, very
African,
huge
Afro-Caribbean
yeah. population, largely from other parts of the region too, but Jamaica yeah, being really the
yeah. yeah. And so I guess my own and my peer group's kind of cultural and political awareness was being shaped and formed by the lyrics of the Jamaican reggae and mm-hmm. the dub poetry of people like Linton Kwesi Johnson. And my idle curiosity was, how come my formal education doesn't mean anything to me, and it's the rhythms of Burns are jarring with lyrics that I don't understand the mm-hmm. meaning of.
But one that sometimes you even have to learn the language, because, you know, again, you're taught Shakespeare in school and you really don't understand, or Chaucer, and
exactly.
you're just like, you're sort of like, this doesn't even read like the language I speak to me.
Exactly. Yeah. And a lot of Robert Burns' poetry is Old Scots.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I didn't know the mm-hmm. meaning of a lot of it. And I suppose I was curious, you know, if that was my cultural heritage, what was the music I was listening to away from school? Was that the cultural polar opposite?
Mm-hmm.
But how could it be the cultural polar opposite if it was helping to shape and form the culture and the social awareness and the political awareness of myself and the peer group that I was mm-hmm. part of growing up?
Yeah, I remember Rock Against Racism really well, because, again, I think we're the same age. So I grew up with, again, Linton Kwesi Johnson and all of that, you know. The Clash as well,
exactly.
and like sort of yeah. that we're all questioning, again, these, yeah, the yeah. tropes of Britishness or Scottishness that we were told
yeah.
were, yeah.
And I suppose what changed it from an idle curiosity for me was that, like, a long time after leaving school, I had the chance to research Robert Burns a bit more for a project, an art project I was working on. And I read a biography of Burns mm-hmm. By a woman called Catherine Carswell. And interestingly, she didn't do what a lot of the male writers did, which was to romanticise Burns. She talked about his humanity
mm-hmm.
And what he was like as a person. And in that biography, I discovered that Burns had booked 3 passages to leave Scotland to go and live and work on a sugar plantation in Jamaica. And that was a shock for me to discover that. And then that's when I found out other songs that at school they didn't tell us about, like Burns's The Slave's Lament. So that changed my perception from an idle curiosity to a history that was mine and a culture that was mine, that was shaped from these two very connected bits of history and cultures that I thought had no relationship at all. And the reason I was thinking that was because what I was being formally taught in school. And I was very angry because at school, formally, I was taught parts of my cultural identity, mm-hmm. But vital parts like our involvement, the Scottish involvement with the transatlantic slave trade, were completely left out of our mm-hmm. formal education. And fundamentally, I was angry because that is wrong. That shouldn't be mm-hmm. the case. Given that information, I suppose, as an artist, I was left with lots of very difficult questions about what to do or what should I do with this information that I was finding out. And although the subject matter was perhaps difficult to deal with, as an artist, I felt that if I was an artist who was serious, about my convictions for what artists do and what they can do as part of a broader culture, then I had to address these difficult questions that were coming from the discovery of this relationship between Robert Burns, mm-hmm. my interest in Jamaican reggae, and this uneasy connection that I found between my own Scottish historical background and my contemporary enjoyment and use and knowledge gained from the Jamaican reggae and dub poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I started doing as an artist. I tried to address this subject area by trying to make artworks that would in some way try to address this lost history from my own culture, if you like, but try and pair it with this cultural influence that was coming from the lyrics and from the words of the Jamaican reggae and the dub poetry of Linton Kwesi Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So the artwork that I made that you can see here in the Bahamas, titled The Slave's Lament, is an audio video artwork. So by that, what I mean is that you'll be able to see the song being performed on 4 TV monitors, and you'll be able to hear the vocals and the sounds from those instruments as they perform that song. And the work in itself was probably 14 years in the making. It's taken me about that amount of time to reach a kind of stage that you get to see when you go to see that work in the art gallery here in the Bahamas. And what you're seeing is a performance of the song by the reggae singer Ghetto Priest, who I've been working with since 2004. And he's joined with three other performers. So there's a violinist, there's a cello player, and there's a double bass. And then there's a fifth audio channel that you don't see, but you hear, and that's a kind of overdub, if you like, onto the sounds that these four singers and players are creating. So as the viewer for that, you get to see the actions of four people, and you get to experience the reaction of their actions. So the finger pressing the string and the hand pushing the bow, or Ghetto Priest vocal singing, you get that action, you get to hear the reaction as the viewer.
Mm-hmm. So thank you so much. I have to say, I've watched it a few times now, and it's really interesting learning about when you learn about the evolution of the project, it already begins to answer some questions, because for me, we've only got 2 minutes left, so I'm going to maybe have to answer the question after the break. What was strange for me the first time I watched it was to see classical instruments, with which I associate so much with a European heritage, very upper class, probably. Classical music is so often seen as something elite, even though, of course, many, many musicians are not from an elite family or social economic group. But again, it's something that's perceived as being sort of elitist. And then, you know, this kind of clash with Ghetto Priest, who I know from, of course, my upbringing and the music I listen to, as being this, you know, kind of Rastafarian and, you know, of African descent. And it seemed like such a weird pairing that I was really kind of thrown by that at first. I was like, whoa, okay. You know,
yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, maybe we can go into this further after the break. But for me, I sort of thought about it, and I thought, is this a culture clash? And I suppose I was thinking about culture clash again back in those terms of the kind of rock against racism times, when that culture, that language of use of the word culture clash was seen as something very positive. And I was thinking, looking at the work now, I was thinking, no, actually, it isn't a culture clash. It's a culture harmony, if you like. It's taken preconceptions and challenging those preconceptions with the harmony that comes out of that work.
Yeah, which is also really interesting, and we'll talk about that after the break too, when you position that in the Caribbean, where we are the result of whether it's a clash or a harmony is a big question, but of different cultures coming in together and forming a culture. Because when you start to unearth Bahamian culture, there are European parts of it, there are African parts of it, and there are within Europe even different parts. You know, there's Greek and there's Anglo, and it's really interesting that, you know, when you look at what our culture is today, it's very much a conch salad, which is like a sort of mix up of everything.
Exactly.
And so I thought that was, you know, to see that here was, you know, again, quite interesting. So anyway, I'm speaking with Graham Fagan, who is the artist of an artwork called The Slave's Lament, which is one of the pieces in a show opening tomorrow night at the National Art Gallery entitled We Suffer to Remain. The artwork is in conversation with three artworks by Bahamian artists who were asked to respond to the work. And that opening is tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, and we'd love to see you. You're going to hear more from Graham Fagan after the break. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break.